Ladies and gentlemen.
System loading.
The Kelly Mano Show.
We're on a mission from God.
Is on the air.
Is on the air.
Are there any questions before we proceed?
Radio signal from another world.
In three.
What would you been waiting for?
Go, kid, let's go.
Two.
Start the show. Start the show.
One.
Hey. It is the Kelly Mano Show.
That was a nice open.
Thanks. I just feel like singing.
All right.
And it's ironic because I'm crabby today.
Yeah, you and me both.
All right. Well, I know why you're crabby. We were just talking off the air. First of all, before we go into Hoss being a stalker, let's just do one big show today.
Okay.
Because I feel like we have a ton of content, and we'll break it up into like part one and part two.
Sure, there's a lot that happened.
Yeah, because we were going to do two shows and just, you know, shit happens. So we're going to do one really, really big show. We'll break it up somewhere in the middle so that you guys can take a break and then listen to the other half if you don't have time to sit and listen to a 2-hour show.
Sure.
So over the week, you know, Hoss works in the music industry.
Yep.
So he works with a lot of famous people. He works with, you know, musicians all the time. So he's not, I wouldn't call you starstruck by any stretch.
I don't get starstruck a lot, but I do think that the starstruck comes in the fact that every athlete wants to be a rock star.
Right.
And every rock star wants to be an athlete. So 9 times out of 10, if I'm going to get starstruck, it's going to be over a pro athlete.
Exactly. So you love Wayne Gretzky.
Oh, hands down, my favorite pro athlete of all time.
And you have been trying to get a jersey signed for years.
Since he played for the Blues.
And what jersey is it? I mean, I know you've got a lot, but if you got to get one.
It's my Blues one. I have an authentic Gretzky Blues jersey.
So Wayne Gretzky has this hockey camp every year, and it comes around to St. Louis. And, you know, Hoss texted me last week. He's like, dude, is Rocky going to Gretzky's hockey camp? And I'm like, yeah, it's $800.
Which is a lot of money.
It is a lot. Most hockey camps are around $500, and so it's not that much more. But
well, you're paying for the name.
You are. And so I'm like, no, Rocky's not going. But I'm like, you know, it's at a public rink. I'm like, if you really want this, you know, sign, because Hoss likes hockey. Hoss has come to several of Rocky's youth hockey games.
Yeah, I'm pretty much addicted. I'll watch hockey. I don't care who's playing.
Right. And you work from home, so you've got a laptop.
Yep.
So I said, why don't you just go hang out at the rink and work on your laptop, and maybe he'll be there and you can get an autograph.
Yep.
So how many days did you spend at the rink this week?
I just went two. I went the first day.
Yeah.
And then I went today, which was the last day. And the first day was like super. I could tell that it was just basically going to be super instructional. I was like,
right.
I'm not sitting through 5 days of this.
Yeah.
But I saw that the last day of camp was games. I'm like, all right, I'll go check out 4 hockey games for free. Because it says, like, if you pull up Gretzky's Hockey School, it says you can come and watch.
So at what,
cool, man.
At what point did you get kicked out for being the 7-foot-tall creepy dude without a kid at hockey
game? Today, actually. I didn't show up for the little kid game at 8 o'clock this morning because I just didn't want to
get up that
o'clock.
Early.
Yeah. But I was there for the second peewee game, like the older kid peewee game.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the 2 higher level games. And it was actually really good hockey. It was fun to watch.
Sure. And you're there minding your own business.
Yeah, man. I'm sitting there.
Did you have like a stack of 10 Gretzky jerseys with you?
Nope.
Okay.
I just had my blue zip up on because I'm at an ice rink. And
right.
I had a backpack on, which with, had like, my jerseys. Blue jersey in it.
Sure.
But like everybody there had a backpack.
Of course.
So I think the fact that I was there for 3 games is what probably must have tipped someone off.
And you're 7 feet tall.
Well,
so you're,
yeah,
you're
I mean,
easy to recognize.
I don't blend in well.
You
at
don't
all.
Blend in anywhere.
So with like 5 minutes left in the last game, this dude comes up to me and he's not wearing a Gretzky School shirt. Like everybody who's working for the camp
has a
stuff
shirt
that says Gretzky Hockey
yes.
School. He's not wearing a Hardy's Iceplex shirt, just a dude in a polo shirt. And I forget how he phrases it, but basically comes up and asks me what I'm doing there. And I was like, hey, man, I'm watching hockey.
It's a public place. I mean, it's private property,
right.
But it's open to the public.
And so he goes, well, you know, this is a private event. And for a minute, I really thought about, okay, let's do this. And then I was like, no, let's not do this.
Yeah.
And I just went, look, man, there is 5 minutes left in this game. And this is the last game of the day. I'm not going to come crash your pizza party. I don't care. Like, I'm going to watch this game and leave.
Right.
And so he's like, well, do you have a kid here? And I was like, no, dude. I just told you I'm here watching hockey. And he goes, well, you know, there's a lot of kids running around unattended. And I just looked at him. I go, I am not
going to snatch up someone's kid and run for the door. He thought you were a child snatcher.
Yeah, I was like, easy guy. I was like, I think you would notice if I grabbed a kid under my arm and made a beeline for the door.
You should have grabbed a Gretzky jersey under your arm and made a beeline for the door. That would have been a smart thing to do.
There was two of them on a table that they were raffling off. There was a signed Edmonton one and a signed Team Canada
one. Just take one and go.
I thought about it. I would have been like, here, I'll trade you for the St. Louis one.
Right. You just swap
it
out.
That's not signed. There you go. But I bet you know the guy who can sign it.
Here you go. You know who approached you. Just some, your standard dickhead hockey dad. Like,
probably.
Like every team has two or three dads or coaches that are just dicks.
Yeah.
You know, and they're at the rinks. They're just looking to have a confrontation with somebody. Yep. They're looking to. So he probably plotted it out. Like, oh, look at that dude. He doesn't have a kid here.
Well, I'm hoping that he is the dad of a kid who I saw get smacked right in the face with karma today.
Oh, yeah? That happens a lot in hockey.
Oh, so the third game of the day, which is not the oldest kid group, but the group right below that.
Probably Pee-wees.
I would say the group maybe right above where Rocky would be.
Then Bantams. Could they check?
No. Nobody checked.
Okay. Bantams can check, so this would have been Pee-wee then.
So he's the goalie for the red team. Yeah, I can't tell you his number because everybody on every team is number 99.
Yeah, okay.
His team is obviously a lot quicker than the other team.
Yeah.
And so the play is on the far side of the ice quite a bit.
Yeah.
His team scores the first goal, and the goalie, starts celebrating.
Ooh.
He starts riding his stick like a horse around his goal.
Are you kidding me?
Oh, yeah.
And like, he's a peewee?
Yep. And he's like dancing in his crease. during the game, dancing in his crease, like waving to his parents and stuff like that. And I was like, I can't wait for when this crashes down on you. Sure as shit. In the third period, dude gives up four goals and they lose the game by
no,
one.
No, were you like talking smack to the kid? Is that why you got
no,
kicked out?
No, I was just quietly going, this serves
you right.
Were you
like, you suck, 99?
Oh, I was just like, in my mind, I was like, yep, this is why you don't do it.
That's really funny. Yeah, karma works itself out usually pretty well in hockey. Sometimes it doesn't, but Lucy starts hockey this week. So
nice. There were a lot of girls there, I noticed.
Yeah,
and actually, the last game, one of the goalies was a girl.
Yeah, they, you know, girls play hockey too. They usually play with the boys. Lucy will be playing with the boys.
Yeah.
There are some girl teams as you get older.
Right.
But girl sports are so mean.
Yeah.
I'm almost relieved that she's going to be playing with the boys. Because I played girl sports and I've had, you know, punches in the ribs and my ponytail yanked and, you know, mean things said in my ear. And yeah, girl sports is ugly. And so at least in hockey, I know that she's not going to get, you know, her ass kicked because,
right,
you know, nobody on her team is going to put up with that. And nobody, no guy on the other team is going to, you know.
Oh, sure. I would imagine at some point if someone took a run at her that one of her teammates would come and knock
that
dude's ass down.
I mean, they won't treat her special. I mean,
well, sure.
But they also won't go out of their way to make her life miserable like they do Rocky or any other boy out there. So
my freshman year in high school, we played a team that had a girl lineman in football.
Oh, jeez.
And she lined up across from me, and I was just like,
where do I hit you?
Right, because as a lineman, you're taught, like, I'm an offensive lineman, so I can't grab. I have to use my hands and push. And what they tell you to do is go underneath the shoulder pads and push up. And I'm like, I'm not going to grab this girl's boobs and run her backwards. And so, like, the first play, I knocked her down.
Yeah.
And I was just like, this is what I'm supposed to do, but I feel really bad.
Yeah.
And she's like, dude, I'm on the football field for a reason. I was like, all right. Game on.
Awesome. All right. Well, I'll let you guys know how Lucy does at camp this week. We'll be right back. It is the Kelly Mano Show. Getting funky on the mic like an old batch of collard greens. It's the capital S-O-S, I'm fresh and double O-P, D-O-double-G-Y-D-O-double-G, you see. Showing much flex when it's time to wreck a mic. Pimping hoes and clocking a grip like my name was Dolomite. Yeah, and it don't quit. I think they in the mood for some up nigga for G shit. Hell yeah. So Drake, what up, dog? Gotta give them what they want. What's that, G? We gotta break them off something. Hell yeah. And it's gotta be bumping. City of Compton. Square 6. The Kelly Mano Show.
Sassy, classy, and a little smartassy.
Okay, the classy part might be a stretch. It's the Kelly Mano Show.
The Kelly Mano Show is brought to you by Rachel Witt with Remax. Now, Haas, you know we're moving into the Turtle House in like a couple of weeks,
I'm
right?
I'm so excited.
Because we're going to be like 2 weeks two weeks from you. We're going to be like 10 minutes from you, first of all. And second of all, I keep telling you that we have a bathtub that is horse size.
I need to see this to believe
this. I took a picture. You're not going to believe this bathtub. You can probably fit six people in this bathtub.
Wow.
There's three of us in it.
Holy crap.
Is that not the biggest bathtub you've ever seen?
That's large.
We need to do a whole show from the bathtub.
That's hysterical.
But in like full scuba gear. I'm not doing a show in my swimming suit, but I'll do it like in a snorkel or something.
Boss is never taking a bath in our bathtub.
It wouldn't be an actual bath. You would be there helping us produce it.
I am never taking a bath.
Scuba Steve. I can do it Scuba Steve style.
Scuba Steve. Scuba Steve. Gary will be in there too.
I don't want to bathe with either of those men.
Oh my gosh. I mean, I don't really want to bathe with you guys either because I'd be worried that you'd fart in the bathtub and bite at the bubbles.
Well, you know. I mean, I can't say that I wouldn't.
Who doesn't fart in the bathtub? That's like
part.
One of the best feelings ever. We're doing a commercial right now, in case you forgot.
Nice.
We're talking about Rachel Witt with Remax. You know, we met her just by chance. We had gone to an open house a while ago. Gosh, like a year and a half ago. And we walked out and I was like, I love that real estate agent because I have the attention span of a chipmunk and I'm not the easiest person to work with. And so I'm like, she's patient. She knows her stuff. I found out she had been in the business for over 13 years. Rachel is all about the service, not the sale. She wants you to be happy in the home that you get in. She does not want you to settle for something that you're not going to like 5 years down the road. Buying and selling a home is a hard process, and I would not want to do it with anybody else. If you're thinking about doing it yourself, it's never too early to get in touch with Rachel. This is not a decision that you make over a couple months. If you're thinking of moving in the next year, this is the time to give her a call. Her number is 636-720-3836. You can also go to her website, which is homesalesinstcharles.com. This is my favorite Prince song.
I was just going to say that I think this song is in every girl's top five Prince song.
It's got to be. I mean,
I don't know why. I do know why, but...
What's funny is that we did a palm routine to this song in high school.
I think my girlfriend did, too.
And now that I know what the words are to this song,
dirty.
I'm like, holy hell.
Oh, yeah.
I can't believe we get to do that. So over the weekend, a couple of big things happened. Number one... we found out what we already knew, which was that Prince died of an opioid overdose. Now, when I read that, I automatically thought that that meant like Vicodin or Percocet, because I didn't even know that it went higher than that. Mm-hmm. Well, I knew that it went to like OxyContin, because I hear about that on the news. But apparently, he was using something called fentanyl.
Yeah.
And this is a patch that is only used for... like extreme pain, like you're dying of cancer kind of pain. And so why would he even have access to something? I mean, I watched my dad die of cancer. He never had a fentanyl patch, and he was in horrid pain.
He had access to it because he's Prince and he can.
But
that's the short answer.
Did nobody learn from Michael Jackson that
it doesn't matter. Unfortunately, money talks. And when you have that much money and that much clout and that much pull, you'll find people
who
will do it for you because they want to say that they're connected to whoever it is, be it Prince or Michael Jackson or whatever.
What's crazy is, you know,
right
before his death, like the day or two before, he was seen like leaving a Walgreens.
Yep.
Could you imagine, like, you're the Walgreens pharmacist and Prince is there all the time?
Yeah.
You know, but, and wouldn't, you know, I'm surprised there's not a better system in place to know when somebody's getting too much medicine.
It'll be interesting to see if they can trace back to who wrote the prescription. Because, funny side note, I used to work with a guy whose dad was Prince's dentist.
Ooh, I hear dentists are big ones on getting, like, the narcotics. When we...
I have no idea.
Well, I know this because one of my former bosses in radio, he overcame addiction. And that was like he was having dental surgery all the time.
Oh.
You could not pay me to go to the dentist.
No.
I mean, like, I go once a year kicking and screaming.
I agree.
And, you know, I wonder if the pharmacist saw red flags.
Well, I could be wrong, but aren't there systems in check that if you try to refill something too soon, it tells the pharmacy this can't be refilled?
Yes, under controlled substances, it does. However, I think that what a lot of people do is something called doctor shopping, where they have more than one doctor. They're seeing more than one, like, general physician who's prescribing all this stuff, but it's not cross-referenced in any system. Because I just saw something in Missouri that they just passed that. Because I remember when I had surgery back in January, just when I had that big handful of prescriptions,
right,
when I went to Walgreens to fill them, I remember, like, feeling nervous. Like, are they going to think I'm a junkie? And, like, even saying to the lady, yeah, I'm having surgery tomorrow. Like, I'm not crazy, you know?
So I
couldn't imagine going in all the time or going in perfectly able-bodied and saying, here, fill my fentanyl prescription patch.
Right. Well, you know that there are certain things like Claritin D. I forget what's in it. Something that's in it is commonly used to make meth.
Really?
In St. Charles County,
you have to have a prescription. Cough medicine.
I can drive 20 minutes down the road from where I live to Warrenton,
yeah,
and go pick it up at a Walgreens. No questions asked.
That's
weird because, like, it's county by county.
And it's stupid people making stupid laws.
Yep.
Just because I can't buy cough medicine doesn't mean I can't get high or I'm not going to turn around and go buy a bottle of vodka.
Well, and I think that when you deal with things like prescription drugs, it's much like the gun debate. You know, you can pass as many laws as you want.
Right.
But it's not the people who are doing things above board that are the problem. The problem is, in any case, be it with guns or with this, if someone wants it bad enough,
they're going to get it.
They will find somebody who has the price that they'll pay, and they may have to pay 3 or 4 times market value. But if you're Prince and you want it bad enough,
right,
you'll get it.
And I think that a lot of it, I've read, has to do with your brain and your predisposition to different kinds of addictions.
Yep.
Because, you know, anytime I've had a prescription to pain medicine, you know, I've absolutely taken it outside of its use, meaning that when I'm done with it, I don't throw it away. I save it, you know, and use it for either like a day that I'm feeling blue or, you know, there have been times when like I couldn't sleep.
Yep.
So I'll get up and say, oh, I've got this old Vicodin or whatever.
I've had a doctor tell me to do that.
Yeah. And I take them to fly. I've got a couple of friends with chronic pain. And anytime I fly, I take one because it's kind of like having a glass of wine for me, but I don't drink, so I'd imagine but then it wears off 4 hours later and I'm fine. But now when my prescription runs out, like when my Vicodin ran out, you know, 6 weeks ago or whenever after my surgery, there was nothing in my brain that said, I need to find more of this on the black market, or I need to doctor shop, or I need to call my doctor and get another prescription. So what is in my brain that can go, hey, this makes me sleep good and feels like I had a glass of wine?
I don't know.
And then there's other people who they can be on it once and then
they have to have it.
Right.
The body and the mind are weird things, man. I have no idea. Addiction is a real thing. I mean, look at Brett Favre was addicted to painkillers for years.
I'm sure a lot of the athletes were, because think of how long it was before people realized it was a problem.
Yeah.
You know, what did people do in the 70s and 80s? Did they not have those kind of painkillers back then?
Well, remember, was it the 80s when they were called greenies? But it was essentially uppers. There were just bowls of them in Major League Baseball locker rooms.
Holy cow.
And players would take them by the handfuls.
Oh, I didn't see. I had no idea of that.
Yeah.
I just know that, you know, I just think that some people's brain is wired differently.
Oh, 100%.
And I'm not saying I don't have an addictive personality, because I smoked cigarettes for 8 years. And that was really, really hard to quit.
The other thing that I had heard with Prince, and I don't know if this has been verified or not, but I heard that he suffered from extreme stage fright. And that's where the self-medication to get on stage came in.
Well,
I can't believe that dude had stage fright that bad.
No.
As amazing, as charismatic as he was, both on stage and on camera acting, like when he was on New Girl a couple years ago and things like that, that does not strike me as the guy who suffers from extreme stage fright to the point that he needs to be drugged up to get on stage.
I don't think that he had stage fright, but maybe at some point in his career, he started realizing, hey, this is a whole lot easier
maybe.
If I take this drug first, because it numbs all the pain receptors in your body.
Yeah.
It numbs not only your physical pain receptors, but your mental ones.
Yeah.
Like if you've had a bad day and just everything's on your mind, you take this little pill and it all goes away.
Yeah.
And so maybe he started to rely on it. And that's
how I think most people get there is they start to rely on it and they can't handle being normal anymore. Like the high is the new normal.
Exactly. Because a lot of people who are addicted say, I don't feel high when I take it. It makes me feel normal when I don't have it. Every bone in my body hurts and every, you know.
And then you have to take more and more and more to get back to normal.
I know. One thing that I think could help everybody is exercise. I just started trying to exercise last week. And,
you and me both.
It's amazing how good you feel when you exercise.
Not the first 2 days.
Oh, I could not even get up and down off the toilet without sounding like a dead donkey yesterday. I had to shoot a wedding and I'm going.
That's amazing.
I was going down the stairs like a little old grandma, and like, one of the bridesmaids are like, are you okay? And I'm like, I'm fine, I just worked out with the devil and I'm very out of shape. Also over the weekend, Muhammad Ali had passed away. So greatest boxer of all time. What I did not know was that did you hear, or maybe this is wrong because it's on Facebook and I don't believe anything on Facebook, did he change his name to avoid the American draft because he didn't want to fight for
I don't know if that is the reason he changed his name.
Because he converted to Islam, right?
Yeah, he became Muslim and then was a religious exempt. I forget what the term is. Religious, whatever it is. Basically exempted himself on religious reasons from the war. I don't know if he did that to dodge the draft or was doing that. And then as a product of it was like, hey, I'm not going to go fight.
Right.
Elvis
went and fought?
Yeah. I mean, look, there's no one in this world that you can't find something questionable on.
Sure.
And you know, and the bummer with Muhammad Ali is it sucks that he's gone, but at least that dude's whole again.
Oh, if you've watched him, nobody wants anybody to live like that ever.
The last 10 years for Ali, and you see pictures popping up on social media now of other celebrities meeting him, and it's cool to see all these people excited to meet him.
But it's almost like
you look at him and it's like,
he don't even know what planet he's on.
No, he's just a shell of himself. And it was so sad.
The last photo of him taken was with Carrie Underwood.
Yeah.
And did you see that?
I did.
He looked terrible.
Did you see the picture of him and Prince?
No, I did not.
It's back, I think, in like the mid-80s, and they both look awesome.
That's amazing. So
that dude, I'll tell you right now, and I posted this on Twitter the night that he died. The quote, it's not bragging if you can back it up, I think had to have been written about Muhammad Ali.
Yeah.
That dude would tell you what he was going to do to you and then go out and do it.
I love that. I love people who back up what they say. I love people who are honest.
Yep.
You can't have, everybody's got that one honest friend.
Yep.
You know.
And that dude would be the first to tell you that he was the greatest of all time.
Right.
But then he would go out and whoop your ass and prove it.
Exactly. Well, rest in peace, Muhammad Ali. And, you know, his family. We've got an entire two segments coming up in a little bit about death and dying.
Yeah.
We have a hospice nurse coming in, and we also have a gentleman coming in who had a near-death experience. So we got a lot of that to cover coming up next. I think it's going to be really interesting. And,
I'm intrigued.
Yeah. All right. We'll be right back. It's the Kelly Mano Show.
Here I am.
Here I am. Get up. 1, 2, 3, 9, little cutie, I ain't drinking. Scope this, I was just thinking. You plus me, what a ride. If you was thinking the same, we could continue outside. Lay your pretty body against the parking meter. Strip your dress down like I was stripping a pita. I'm enjoying. Let me show you, baby, I'm a talented boy.
Everybody grab a body, pump it like you want somebody.
Get up. So here we are, so here we are, so here we are. Here we are, my paisley crib. What you want to eat?
Ribs.
I'm a toy, I don't serve ribs. You better be happy that dress is still on. I heard the rip when you sat down. Honey, them hips is gone, but that's alright, I clock them that way. Remind me of something James used to say.
I like.
for me. Now move your big ass around this way so I can work on that zipper, baby.
The Kelly Mano Show.
Come on!
Mondays suck a little bit less.
Because the Kelly Mano Show is on the air.
I miss producer Gary.
Yeah?
Yeah, he's still in California. He brings me my lip gloss.
no, I am can't. I slacking?
Well, that's not your duty.
It's true.
It's Gary's duty. Gary will be back soon. He is still with his family in California. Yeah. The Kelly Mano Show is brought to you by Arrow Insurance Specialties. I cannot say enough great things about Arrow. My friend Sarah McDermott on Facebook earlier this week was like, I hate my car insurance. I hate my rate. You know, who can help me out? And I didn't only post under her, but I also messaged her. I said, you have to call Angela at Arrow Insurance Specialties. She is an independent agent that works with several different agencies to cover you on auto, home, life, and business insurance. All you have to do is email her, give her your information. She will come up with a quote for you by email, and you can accept it or you can reject it. She is working with us on our turtle house, so she's going to be the one insuring the Mano's new house. And I would not send you to her if I did not trust her myself. If you are looking at, you know, either changing insurance or starting insurance, Angela Fusaro McCormick at Arrow Insurance Specialties is who you want to call. Her number is 314-450-8384. Again, that's 314-450-8384. Or you can go to their website, which is www.arrownow.net.
Spinderella cut it up one time.
Well, this song is appropriate considering we're about ready to talk about your obsession with Axl Rose.
Oh, Lord.
And how you want to have boy love with him.
Not necessarily.
Can you please, I'm going to give you a minute. I want you to pull up his exact Twitter post.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm going to tell the audience what happened while you pull up his ridiculous post.
It did look like it was written by a 12-year-old,
so
I will say that.
A couple weeks ago, you know, Justin Bieber came out and, you know, we called it that he is on the verge of a Britney 2007 meltdown.
That kid.
Because, you know, he has canceled all of his meet and greets, which means he is no longer doing pictures with the fans. And we on the show talked about it, and Haas lost his mind. He called him every name on the planet. I mean, I wish I could go back and pull the tape. Everything from a douchebag to a, you know, a selfish little brat who doesn't know how to handle his fame. And, you know, he's not going to have any fans anymore. Now, Axl Rose has pretty much been lying dormant for years.
Pretty much.
And he's just now coming back on this reunion thing.
Yep.
And look who comes out of the woodwork saying, well, I don't want to sign any more autographs.
Well, no, I will agree with you that I don't know why it had to be made public. I think that's a douchey move.
Very douchey.
I understand why he's doing it, because here's the tweet.
I want you to read it exactly as he wrote it, because it sounds, Libby Lou could have written it better.
Yeah. The tweet is from May 31st. It says, can't take the e-bears, so unfortunately is spelled UN42NUTZLY. Eyes won't be signing things for number 4 a while. Much love to the real fans.
So he cannot even make it a couple weeks back in the limelight without saying he doesn't want to sign autographs anymore.
Well, you know, if this was something where he was just done with signing, like, I know that there's a lot of artists who are just like, I'm done. I'm not signing anything anymore. I think I would have a little more angst towards this than the fact that he's calling out the eBayers.
Right.
And there is a huge market, and especially right now because he's been dormant for so long, to get him, especially not necessarily on Guns N' Roses stuff, but on AC/DC stuff.
Right.
Because he's fronting AC/DC right now.
If you've ever been to like a signing or around a celebrity, you'll see like this douchebag guy in his 40s with an entire stack of 8x10s.
Yep. And a blue Sharpie. Do you want to know blue?
Why?
Because when you photocopy it, it photocopies black.
Oh.
And it looks original.
Well, okay. Well, that makes sense. But, you know, and so then these guys turn around and sell it on eBay.
Yep.
To me, it's really easy. You just don't sign for those guys.
Yeah,
you sign one per person and then move on.
But how do you know who the real guy is and who the real guy isn't? Because what's to stop me from just coming up with an 8x10 and going, hey, man, will you sign this? And then I'm just going to go to Kinko's and run them off.
Yeah, but I don't know. I just think that you are doing a disservice to your real fans.
You are. You absolutely are.
And cutting off a very small few of them.
I agree. And the only thing that I can rationalize in my head is I'm thinking, well, you know, now if I have to confront someone, I can say I did it on Twitter. But it's not like that's going to stop someone. Because I got news for you. I'm going to go see that band July 9th in Nashville.
Right.
Guess who's bringing his vinyl to Nashville?
Right.
Me.
Try
and
to
if
get
I,
it signed.
And if I see him, I'm going to ask him to sign my vinyl. If he tells me to go F myself, he tells me to go F myself.
But that would break your heart, wouldn't it? It would. Let me tell you. They say don't meet your idols.
Here's the... If it was anyone but Axl, yes. When Magic Johnson basically stood me up, yes.
Oh, he did.
Oh, yeah. With Axl, there's part of me that would want him to be a massive prick because it's Axl, and that's who he is.
And it'll elevate him more in your mind.
So, you know, I still think it's dumb that he did it over Twitter like Justin did.
Yes.
I get why he's doing this as opposed to... I don't want to meet my fans anymore because their stories make me so depressed that I can't perform. That's
right.
BS. That look, the Justin thing is on its own. That kid has got something going on.
He does.
In a major way.
He does.
But, you know, I mean, it's a bummer. I think it's a douche move that he did it over Twitter. That's... But I also get him not wanting to get anyone else rich off of his stuff.
It's like the celebrity equivalent of like when people go on Facebook and go, I'm deleting my friend list today. If you're still here, yeah, you made
exactly.
the cut. I'm like, fuck
I mean,
you. Just delete me then.
There's two ways to handle it.
Yeah.
And one is you either don't sign anymore at all.
Right.
The problem with that is then it raises the value for everything.
And people will try harder.
Yep. The other thing is you sign everything under the sun.
Yeah.
And you completely devalue your autograph.
Oh, famous people problems. I wish I had them.
I've had bands in the past, and I won't name who they are, but we'll sign whatever you put in front of them. You want to bring a log? They'll sign a log.
Yeah.
You want to...
Do people still sign boobs? Is that still a thing?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's what you can do. It's one of those two things. You either sign everything to completely flood the market with your autograph
yeah.
so that it's whatever, everyone can get it. Or you don't sign anything.
I was working for the Cardinals a couple weeks ago, and I was working with Adam Wainwright, who, you know, is just like the best guy, Christian man. He's got four
yep.
kids. And, you know, as the photographer, I have to keep an eye out on them to make sure they're not getting bombarded with autographs. And I look over and I see what I swore was Adam Wainwright signing a woman's boob.
Wow.
Okay, because he's leaned over at her chest and he's signing
her jersey.
And I'm like, where the hell is security? Why? No, it looked like he was signing her skin.
Okay.
And so I start looking around for security thinking, oh my God, he's going to get in so much trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And then the lady just turns a tiny bit and she's holding like a little one-year-old baby and he was signing the baby's onesie. and I was like, oh, thank you, God. Thank you, God, because we would have gotten in so much trouble if Wainwright was signing a boob.
The craziest thing I've ever seen signed was in Denver, Colorado. A lady sent her baby down the line to get signed by a band.
Sent her baby? Like,
not
down?
Not like, sign my baby shirt, like, sign my baby.
Did the baby cry?
No, baby was having fun because he was getting slid down a table. But, like, literally each guy was like...
What do I do with this baby?
She's like, just sign my baby.
He's it's like Carlos in The Hangover.
Yeah. Okay. Non down the line.
That's
baby comes
awesome.
Back with five signatures on his forehead.
Is it a famous band we would know?
It's a band you would know.
Who is it?
They haven't been relevant for a few years, but you would know them.
Who are they?
Hinder.
Oh, okay. From the lips of an angel. Mm-hmm. Yes, I love that song. It's on my Spotify.
They,
tell me what you're doing,
it, dude. It was, and they're looking
give
at me. They looking at me, and I'm just like, if you want to sign it, sign it. You don't want to sign it, don't sign it.
Oh,
whatever.
Speaking of people with total breakdowns, guess who's probably going to die? It is Lamar Odom.
Talked about this a little bit last week.
So last week we talked about the fact that Chloe has filed for divorce because she tried to save him, and he's been caught drinking again. And
at
now,
some point, you got to cut your losses.
Now they've found crack powder. Crack pipes at his house.
Oh,
allegedly.
danger.
And so not only is he deep in his addiction, but you know, when he's sober is when he's going to realize what he lost,
which will hurt even more,
right? Because Lamar was just the most lovable like pillar of that family. He was like the anti-Kardashian. His mom died when
Ain't
he was really, really young. His dad is a drug addict, you know, that sponges off of him.
Yeah.
The Kardashians were really the first family that he ever had, and they treated him very well. Even
if the Kardashians are your rock of sobriety,
You got off to a rough start. You got off to a rough start. And so, you know, for the, I know a lot of people don't like the Kardashians show.
Ronda Rousey's one of them.
Oh, yeah. What did she say?
She was asked over the week if there was one person that you could beat up, one celebrity you could beat up, right, who would it be? And she's actually gone round and round with Kim a few times over the years. And she reiterated again. She said, you know, I guess I would really want to beat the S out of Kim Kardashian. She's famous for making a sex tape and not much else.
Do you know how many people would be so excited to see that?
I would help fund it.
I would too. I saw something really gross over the weekend.
Was it the fact that I did a Who's Your Celebrity Soulmate and it came back as Kim Kardashian?
No.
Blech.
It was a picture of a foot. And I'm so disturbed by it.
I hate feet.
I'm so disturbed by it that I have to show it to you because I want other people to be grossed out.
All right. So it won't take much. Feet are nasty.
There's a picture of a woman whose toes are like as long as her fingers.
Yeah.
And I'm going to post the picture at kellymano.com. Like, no, it's not sausage. They're like long.
Yeah.
And I can't go on.
What is that?
Wait. Okay, so there's some toes.
Is she folding her toes like fingers?
Like she's praying. So
good Lord.
If you want to see these pictures.
That's not human.
That is human.
No, that is an alien.
No. Those are her real toes. Look at my hand compared to her toes.
Toes don't have multiple knuckles.
Hers do.
That's not right.
Now, this might be a serious ploy for...
Can she hang from trees?
For the theory of evolution.
Oh, my God.
All right. I'm going to go to...
Where do you buy shoes?
I don't know. Could you imagine if she wore sandals and you saw that at the pool?
I'd run.
All right. We are going to post the toe pictures at kellymano.com. I will also post the picture of our new bathtub that people aren't going to believe. So there. Now I freaked somebody else out, so I'm happy. That was part one of the show. Take a break now if you want. But when we come back, we are going to talk about death and dying. From toes to the dead.
Oh, it's not a short, not a long ride. They're right next to each other.
We'll be right back. She should have been glad, but she was mad and sad and feeling bad. Thinking about the things that she never had. No love, just sex. Followed next with a check and the note. That last night was dope, dope, dope. Let's talk about sex, baby. Let's talk about you and me. Let's talk about all the good things and the bad things that may be. Let's talk about sex. Let's talk about sex. Let's talk about sex. Let's talk about sex. The Kelly Mano Show. The princess of the 90s is now the queen of the minivan carpool. It's the Kelly Mano Show. The Kelly Mano Show is brought to you by Ultimate Party Entertainment. It is run by our friend Addison, also known as Tim Melton, also known as my dinosaur buddy. If you have a company and you need audio, visual, and entertainment for your corporate event, give them a call. They've been in business since 1994. So what exactly do they do? It can be hard to understand, but to break it down like this, if your company has a meeting, Ultimate Party Entertainment can provide the projectors, the screens, the microphones, the laptop, the lighting, everything you need, no matter how big or small. Even if your event has a reception and a dinner, they can include not only the meeting side of things, but also the lighting, the screens, the drapes, the equipment, plus a DJ or MC for your event. He can do this for any venue. A lot of people use him for weddings, but also, like I said, if you've got a business, big or small, and you're looking to run something, you do not want to be worried about your audiovisual needs at the same time. It is very, very stressful. They have been in business since 1994. Ultimate Party Entertainment, you can call them at 314-920-7789. And if you mention the Kelly Mano Show, you're going to get a 10% discount. Again, that is Ultimate Party Entertainment at www.ultimatepartyonline.com. Part two, taking a little left turn here, talking about death and dying.
Always fun.
And this came about because I read a story a couple weeks ago About a 66-year-old lady named Geraldine Largay.
Is this the world's worst hiker that you were telling me about?
This is the world's worst hiker. When I first read the article, I thought it was an Onion report. And then
it reads like one.
It does, because it said, you know, woman gets lost and dies in the woods, didn't know how to read a compass. And I thought, if you don't know how to read a compass, like, I don't know how to read a compass, you ain't going to see my ass in the woods.
On the path.
I'm not doing any hiking by myself. But apparently this woman was lost years ago. It was in 2013 when she disappeared. And it was in the Appalachian Trails, which is apparently enormous, because they looked for her for weeks and weeks and weeks. I mean, this was one of the most extensive searches that they ever did. And she was just found 2.5 years later. And so was her body found 2.5 years later, but she kept a journal while she was out there. They found her in her tent in a sleeping bag, and she died from the elements, exposure, starvation, that kind of thing. But while she was in the dying process, she kept a journal. And it says, when you find my body, call my husband George and my daughter Carrie. It'll be the greatest kindness for them to know that I am dead and where you found me, no matter how many years from now it is. The entry is dated August 18th, nearly a month after she was reported missing. Her remains would be discovered 2 years later when a logging company surveyor happened upon her body on a campsite. As a result, her family was able to find peace. A couple weeks later, they visited the spot where she was discovered and left a small wooden cross. And so it made me wonder what it's like to really know that you're going to die, because not only did she know she was going to die, but it wasn't a quick thing like, oh, this elevator shaft isn't here.
I'm dead
in 9 seconds. This was a long time that she had to think about this. And I was just wondering what goes through your mind. I mean, Hoss, have you ever had a real serious near-death experience?
Nothing to where I thought that all hope was gone. When I was in college, I fell asleep behind the wheel of my car, and I rolled my car 12 times on the highway. That's probably the closest I've gotten.
Yeah.
But it wasn't something like this to where it's drug out and you lose all hope.
Right.
My first thought in this specific case is, did she not move, or was every day she walking? Was she going in circles?
She was walking. You know, I think that finally after so long, she just kind of set up camp and just stayed in one spot.
I guess at that point, you're like, I'm just going to post up and hope someone finds me.
She was off the trail, I think they said like 3 or 4 miles is what she noted in her notebook. The only near-death experience that I've ever had is actually funny. It's funny now, but it was not funny at the time. Whenever I was in, I guess it was high school or something, they opened the big Batman ride at Six Flags.
Yeah.
And so me and my friends went and waited in this long line to be like one of the first people to ride the ride.
Mm-hmm.
And so we get on the Batman ride at Six Flags. And for those of you who have been on it, the track is above you, not below you. And your feet hang freely. But when you're in the little train console getting ready to take off, there is a track below you.
Yes.
And there's a floor below you.
Yes.
And so we waited in the longest line, which was the front car. And I'm like, I'm going to ride the front car of Batman. And, you know, my mom and her nagging voice in my head was thinking, you know, let somebody else try this out a few times first. Why do you have to be the first one on this? And so I was riding it with my friend Mandy. And as we're click, 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 click going along, you know, it takes this turn, and then all of a sudden the track underneath you disappears.
Yes.
And I thought, oh my God, they didn't finish the track. I thought our Batman cart had went off course and we were getting ready to tumble into the woods. And I've never felt my entire body freeze like that. And you know, like when your stomach drops in your throat, it's like that times 5 million.
Oh wow.
And then all of a sudden it goes down the other side, and when we ended the ride I was crying, and my friend Mandy's like, what's wrong, you love roller coasters? I'm like, I thought they didn't finish this track, and I thought we were gonna die, and I thought we were gonna go in the woods, you know.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so that was the closest I've had to a near-death experience. Have you?
I won't ride Ninja because I swear to God it's going to decapitate me.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, with all those twists and turns and the metal. Well, do you remember when Fabio went on a roller coaster
and
got hit in the face by a bird?
Yep.
You could really get hurt on those things. Okay, we need to keep things on track here.
All right.
We're not supposed to talk about Fabio.
Lady couldn't read a compass. Dies in woods.
Yes.
News at 11.
I have a friend who had a really crazy near-death experience that will send chills down your spine. we had gone on a like a float trip or like a canoe trip, kayak mm-hmm. trip, whatever you want to call it. And he lost his sunglasses, and I was not with them for this part of it. This is his story secondhand. He had lost his sunglasses. They had fallen out of the boat, the canoe, whatever. And it was a little bit of a deeper area, so he dove down to get them. And he said he dove to the bottom, and he felt around, and he felt his sunglasses. And so he planted his feet underneath him, and he pushed up to come to the surface of the water. And when he pushed up, his feet sank in the mud all the way to his knees.
No, no.
Oh. And so he was stuck. And he said that it was instant panic.
Yeah, I would say.
It felt like his legs were in cement. He's a big, strong guy. And he's like, there was no getting my feet out of this.
Well, because you got mud and then you got the water pressure on top.
Because you don't weigh anything underwater. And so there was a moment of panic and struggle. And then he said, all of a sudden, it was nothing but peace. And he started thinking really crazy things.
Mm-mm.
Like he thought, oh my gosh, I can breathe underwater.
No, you can't. Don't try.
He's like, I didn't know I could breathe underwater. And he said that he was just floating. He thought he was breathing under the water. He started to feel himself come out of his body. He started to like see a light. And then it was that moment that his friends had dove in to help him and yanked him up out of the water. And so, well, I've never had a near-death experience. That one stuck with me.
Drowning is one of my biggest fears.
Stop. I don't even want to talk about it. Drowning and choking. Those are the two things that I cannot... I don't go in
Have
water.
Have you ever
that
seen
I
the
can't...
movie Open Water?
No, I don't watch movies.
I won't watch Open Water because it combines two of my biggest fears. Well, three, actually.
Drowning and sharks?
Drowning, sharks, and being alone.
Yeah, yeah. Sharks are not as big of a deal as I thought they would be in my adult life. Like, growing up, I was always scared of Jaws. And my parents were like, we live in Missouri. Or we live in Illinois. Jaws is not going to get you. And so one question that I want to ask Koss before we go to break here, because I think it's interesting, is... what do you think heaven looks like? When you picture heaven, no matter how silly it may be, because maybe it's something from when you were a kid.
I mean, I kind of picture it, I guess, if I have to describe it. Probably like most kids, I would say, like clouds and like a city in the clouds.
Yeah. I always envisioned it as fluffy blue sky. You know, when you're a kid, you look up at the sky and you think heaven's up there somewhere. And I kind of, I picture us as... floating bodies. Like, you can identify people, but I don't know if we look the way we look, if we've got faces.
I think that it is more of a spiritual and what's the word I'm looking for? I don't think it's a physical place.
Right. Well,
I think that it is a there's a word I can't think of it, but anyway, I think that it is a state of spiritual being.
Right.
And I think that we're all there. But I don't think that it is like, I can be like, what's up, Kelly, and high-five you
right.
as we're crossing the streets.
And that's how I feel, too. But you know, in the Bible describes heaven. John the Apostle was able to peek at it. I think it's in the book of Revelation. And he describes it very, very in detail.
Las Vegas, right?
No? Pretty much. Well, he did say, you know, that there's 12 gates and that they are made of pearl. And there's three on the east, north, west, and south.
Sounds just like Vegas.
And that the streets are paved in gold and that the walls are high and they're 200 feet wide and that we are able-bodied. And then we can walk down the street. It even speaks of houses and cities, and it gives dimensions. And there's a lot of debate about
that. Oh, there's floor plans and options?
You're such an ass.
That rent is going to be insanely expensive.
You're going to hell. I'm trying to be serious.
I punched that ticket a long time ago, unfortunately.
All right. Well, I will be up with the angels and the good people.
Well, I'll be having the party.
Well, we're going to find out when we come back what it is like, because my friend Marty, a family friend of ours, had a near-death experience. He is going to be here, as well as a hospice nurse who has been in the business a long, long time, and we are going to get into all that in a minute. So,
do you get a pool in your backyard in heaven?
Have fun in hell. We'll be right back.
Kelly Mano Show.
really good song.
It's not bad.
It's not hard enough for you?
No, it's fine.
Are they going to have heavy metal in hell where you're going?
I mean, if you listen to popular, if you listen to the pop culture, yeah, it's the devil's favorite music. Although that's kind of weird. Like, has anyone asked him? Maybe the devil likes smooth jazz. We don't know.
I don't know. I haven't talked to him lately, so I'm not really sure. But so we have guests in the studio, which
we
means
do.
That we need to behave. So I have my friend
Sorry.
Michelle here. Say hi, Michelle.
Hello.
Don't you love when I randomly ask you to come be on my show?
Day of my life.
Yep. Yeah. And we have Marty here. Say hi, Marty.
Hi. How
All
you
right.
doing?
Everybody can hear you. Good. Michelle, you need to get third day
I'm
close.
All up in it like that. You
that,
hear that?
There you go.
All right.
That is what I want from you.
I got it.
So Michelle is here because, you know, I have been with 5 people when they passed away, either with them or with them exactly afterwards. And Michelle has killed, what, 3 of them?
I think 2. I've got two so far.
I can't remember if you were with my grandpa or not.
No, just the grandma.
Just grandma
yeah,
and dad.
Yeah, but that was unplanned. I mean, yeah, that was just...
We just like to call it bad luck, but every time Michelle comes around...
So like, everybody take a pulse and get a baseline before we get started.
Michelle's the angel of death.
That I have been accused
yes.
before.
She has
wow.
been. But in all honesty, Michelle was with me and my family through the worst time of our life. And so you are a hospice nurse. Is that correct? Or is there a different title for you?
Well, I think that's a safe way to hospice case manager.
Sure.
Yeah.
And so how long have you been doing that?
Oh, gosh. Off and on for probably 4 years.
And what made you want to get into that? Because there's so many different areas of the medical field you could go in. What made you want to get into? Because I don't see that being something a lot of people volunteer to go into.
It's going to sound ridiculous, and it just sounds crazy. I'm good at it.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, I started at Children's a billion
oh.
years ago. Pediatric oncology, so anything after that is...
You can handle.
Yeah.
Well,
Whoa.
I always said that anytime I've had to deal with hospice, they've been nothing but angels, and they
Good.
Have the ability to blend into any family.
Yep.
So even when, like, when Michelle would have to leave, like, her shift was over, and we'd get so nervous, we're like, no, don't go, stay here. The next woman would come in and would be just as good. And so we're going to talk a little bit to you here in a little bit, and you can feel free to chime in with Marty's story as well, because there may be some things that he comes up with that you know. But Marty is here today. Welcome, Marty.
Thank you. Great to be here.
And I also randomly bombarded him and said, hey, I know you almost died once. Can you come be on the show? Is that pretty much how it went?
Well, yeah, but except I did die three times.
You did die. So why don't you go ahead and start us at the beginning and tell us what happened to you and your near-death experience. And I'll jump in and interrupt you when I have a question.
Okay. Well, I was sitting at the computer.
Mm-hmm.
And I had been sitting there for 3 or 4 hours, and I got up to go to bed, and I noticed...
How long ago was this? How many years ago?
2007.
Okay, so about 10 years ago.
Yeah. And I felt this pain in the middle of my chest, but it wasn't a real bad pain. It,
mm-hmm.
it felt like indigestion or something, and I thought, either I ate something or I sat wrong for too long.
Right.
And after I stood up, I was standing, and all of a sudden, bam... It felt like somebody was taking a wash rag, you know, when you squeeze
it
and twist it and it clumps up real tight.
Mm-hmm.
That's just what it felt like right in the center of my chest. And it was the most excruciating pain I've ever felt in my life. Well, I knew what was happening then. A pain like this is a heart attack.
Right. So
I
you
tell
knew
my...
right away that it was very serious.
Oh, yeah.
There wasn't a debate in your head of, should I go to the doctor? Should I stay home?
Yeah, right. I knew that... Well, it was like 9 or 10 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
And I knew that that's what was happening and something had to be done. So I told my partner, and he says, come on, let's get out in the car. We go out to the car, and he couldn't get into the car. He said, I don't know what's wrong. I can't get into the car. He says, I can't make the keys work. So he says, I'll go in and call 911.
You know what? Did you ever find out why that was? It because of the panic that he could not get into the car?
Gotta be.
Because whenever when I was in high school,
but
our freshman year of college, my best friend was killed in a car accident. And when my friend called to tell me and I went to call my very best friend, I couldn't remember her phone number.
Mm-hmm.
And this was in the 90s when everybody knew everybody's number. And
yep.
I could dial that number in my sleep. I could dial it right now. And I couldn't remember her phone number. And I remember thinking, I can't make my brain work. And so I bet that's what happened to him.
Probably. That
so he went
it.
In and called 911 because he could not get in the car. And you're no help because you're having a heart attack.
Yeah. I mean, all I could do was just hold my chest like this and go, oh, my God. Oh, my God. It hurts so bad. So it's a pain you can't even tolerate. But
I don't
you
want
have
that.
To tolerate
I'll
it
because
there's
on that.
No... You have no alternative but to tolerate it.
So he goes in and he calls 911.
He calls 911 and they get there in 2 or 3 minutes.
Wow.
And then we found out that it's a good thing that we didn't go in the car because that would have been gone too long and I'd have been dead.
Wow.
So anyhow, they take me out to the, put me on the gurney and wheeled me out to the ambulance. And... I'm laying there, and he says, this pain is continuing like crazy. The EMT tech says to me, he goes, okay, we're going to get you stabilized. He says, and then we're going to go to the hospital. Well, all of a sudden, everything was black. Mm-hmm. And I mean pitch black.
But were you still conscious?
No.
Okay.
Well, I was conscious, but I was not conscious.
Probably conscious while it was going to black.
I wasn't as conscious in this life, if you understand what I'm saying there.
Right.
And I'm looking around, and it wasn't hot. It wasn't cold. It was very comfortable. I wasn't afraid. Nothing to fear. And I thought to myself, what? But it wasn't the English word, what? It was the essence of what means.
Mm-hmm.
And I had no cognizance of anything. It was
not even like, the English language,
no past or anything. It was like I had just come into existence. Weird. So after I thought, what, all of a sudden I see blue sky and trees forming over here, and I see these trees and these plants, and I felt love and welcome from these plants, and I felt a connection to them, and I don't understand what that connection was.
And this was at nighttime, right?
Yeah.
This was 9 or 10 o'clock at night when you had your heart attack.
Well, when I had the heart attack, that it was neither there compared to what was happening in my near-death experience. But anyhow, and I'm seeing these farther over in front of me, everything is appearing, and I feel to myself, I feel, wow, I feel whole.
Did complete. You know, did you think you were in heaven, or did that not even
cross
no your mind?
I had no idea where I was. I just knew it was a wonderful feeling where I was at.
Almost too happy to even care or question why you're there.
Right. I didn't even question it. I was just observing, and everything was wonderful. And I knew... I don't know. Where I was, it was like way out in the country and like a hill.
Mm-hmm.
I was standing on a hill and the hill went down and here's these trees and everything down there. Like maybe there was a creek or a stream of some kind. And I knew there was something wonderful beyond those trees.
I've seen that episode of Little House on the Prairie.
Shut up, Hoss.
I don't know what was there, but I knew something was there. I knew it. No doubt in my mind.
So
I knew it.
I have a question. When you said that you thought what, but it wasn't like the English word for what, were you able to recognize what you saw as trees and plants at the time?
Oh, yeah.
Or was it not until you came back that you were like, oh, those were trees and plants?
No, I knew what they were.
Interesting.
I don't even know how to explain it.
Sure,
I mean,
I would have no idea how to.
So look,
that's amazing. I mean, that's amazing. I mean, that's crazy.
So then take us to.
It is crazy, but it happened.
Yeah, for sure.
So was there more to that episode beside the trees and something being beyond it? Do you wake up then in the hospital, or does this carry on?
Nope, it goes on.
All right,
a
keep
bit.
Going.
Oh,
keep
wow.
going. I want to hear it.
Well, when I realized that there was something fantastic. I wanted to go explore. I was always a type out in the country. I wanted to go explore, you know?
Sure.
I started to go, and I couldn't move. I couldn't move my feet. And at that time, I felt that feeling again in my chest, but it didn't hurt. It was just the action that I felt, but it didn't hurt. If you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah, I understand that.
So I thought, why can't I move? And let's see, what was I contemplating anything? At that time, yeah, the thing I was contemplating was that my state of being, everything was just more real than I could ever imagine.
Wow.
I mean, so anyhow, I'm wondering, why can't I move? And when I look down, instead of seeing my feet and the ground, it's like I'm looking out into, I guess it was eternity, because it was not space, but it looked like space.
So there was no ground. It was just like a never-ending space.
Well, when I looked down,
mm-hmm.
there was ground before I looked down, but when I looked down, it was a completely different scenario.
Wow.
So the hill's gone, and now it's just like a vastness below you.
But do you have fear? Is there fear?
No, never, ever, ever any, not even that much fear. I mean, none. Absolutely no fear.
So what happens next once you realize that there's no space below you?
Well, it's not that I didn't notice any space below me, because it didn't matter. For some reason, I felt like, well, I'm here, and this is all happening. Mm-hmm. I never thought that I'd be falling or going up or whatever. I'm just observing. But as far as I could see, it was this misty blue, bluish-gray light color. And I saw a couple, like, real thin lines, just thin lines. A couple of them were straight. One of them was arced. And then I saw one. It wasn't a line. The other feature that I saw was this enormous, enormous sphere. And I don't know whether it was a planet. I don't think it was a planet. But it was just an enormous sphere. So far out, it was almost hard to make out. I have no idea what that was. Absolutely none. So then I looked a little bit farther over to the right, and I see these. They look like a cross between a dark TV screen and a bubble. I mean, okay. It sounds crazy, but that's what I saw. And there was a bunch of them there. And one of them flashed real fast. And I remembered this life, but I didn't remember my life. I just remembered life on Earth.
That there was another.
That's where I was from. Where, you know.
Was this happening fast or slow? Like, did it feel like it all happened in 1 minute, or was this like a 10 minute ordeal?
Well, it felt like it was happening in real time.
Okay.
Wow.
You know. But as far as how long the near-death experience itself lasted, I would say no more than maybe a half a minute from what I remember. Mm-hmm. Now, more might have happened that I don't remember. I don't know.
So what happened after the flash?
Well, after the flash, I saw what life is like here, how people get so wrapped up in materialism and themselves and pursuing things and forget about each other. And you might think about your family and your loved ones and everything, but I mean, the important things about life that are really important, everybody's forgetting about them and doing their own thing. And it's really not their fault, because that's the kind of society we have.
One thing that almost every single near-death experience has in common is that they don't want to come back.
Oh, I did not want
to
come back.
If you talk to somebody who's been to the other side or seen the light or seen what you've seen, they don't want to come back.
I did not want to come back.
And so we know what's happening in your mind. What was happening to your body and on Earth? What happened to you physically?
Well, I had the heart attack, of course, and I guess they were... I only remember the one EMT. I think there was two, but I only remember the one, and I even know his name was Noah.
Did you
That's crazy. That's
did
awesome.
You officially flatline when you were the hospital, or was it in the?
I flatlined there, in the, while I was having my near death experience, I guess, and then I was flatlined twice in ER.
Wow!
Did they do CPR on you, and do you know how long?
Oh, I don't know. I was out.
Okay.
I was out the whole time, except for when my consciousness, spirit, whatever you want to call it, returned into my body. I was conscious then, and then I wasn't conscious. And then I woke up in the ER for maybe 2 seconds, opened my eyes, I remember, and looking around. And I was just laying there, and I saw people in the distance running around. And I closed my eyes, and then next time I woke up, I was in ICCU. So.
Wow.
That was a quick change. So you end up in ICU.
Yeah.
And at what point do you realize that you've had this near-death experience? Did you know as soon as you woke up, or did it take a couple days?
No, as soon as I woke up, I knew what happened to me. But what occurred to me was, well, when I've heard of these near-death experiences, are these kind of thing happening to people, they always talk about the tunnel and the light.
And you didn't
and
see
I
that.
And I didn't see that.
Wow.
You know?
Did you grow up in a spiritual family believing in God?
Well,
or what,
yeah.
What was your faith like before you flatlined, and what is your faith like after this experience?
I grew up raised Lutheran in the church, Sunday school.
Drugged there
church
by your parents.
yeah. Now, my dad didn't go a lot.
Neither did mine.
Yeah, football, man.
I used to rat him out to the priest all the time. He's like, "Where's your dad?" Me and my mom and brother would be standing there. I'm like, "He said he had to mow the yard again." So you grew up in the church.
Yeah.
And tell me about your spirituality before this heart attack.
I wouldn't consider myself a spiritual person before that. I just went to church because I basically believed what I was taught. And
did that change after your experience? Did you feel closer to God, or?
Well, I need to back up because.
Go ahead.
I'd done contemplating about God and everything. You know, you take science classes and you learn how this works, and you learn that the Earth is 13.5 billion years old, and you know the stuff about Noah's flood. That's It just doesn't make sense when
you. So the Bible doesn't make sense to you.
Yeah, that, you know, stuff like that doesn't, you know. But when I questioned, I was at the point where I thought, well, I don't know whether there's a God or not. But if there's a God, and I said, God, let me know what I'm doing wrong. Well, that was about 20 years.
Wow.
And then I got to the point where, excuse me. I thought, you know, there's no evidence that there's a God. You know, we can trust science for what it tells us. We can trust this, you know, because they study our, you know, nobody comes to these conclusions, you know, to prove there is no God. They're interested in these things, and they loved studying about them, and they find what they find. And then for about 15 years before I had the near-death experience, I was of the opinion that there's no God.
Mm-hmm.
You're born, you live your life, and you die, and that's the end of you. But then I have this near-death experience thing. And
Michelle was over there just smiling.
You're so lucky. I mean, you really are. That's an amazing thing. That would increase my faith by like 5 billion.
Right.
For sure.
Yeah.
Well,
for sure.
You know what? What I found out, what I'm comfortable with and what I know, because it doesn't matter what you believe or don't believe, it's how you treat your fellow person.
Sure.
That's what's important.
And so would you consider
and even
yourself,
if you're a jerk, you won't go to hell, because I've done research on this. The people that experience hell from near-death experiences, several of them I had read about said when they began to look around at other people and be concerned about them is when they were pulled up out of the out of this hell.
So see, I'm gonna be okay.
I've been telling Hawes he's going to hell. Well, your story's fascinating, Marty. We are gonna we're gonna take a quick break, and then I'm interested to come back and talk to Michelle and her thoughts on Marty's story. And I'm interested to know, you've probably had some interesting experiences in people's homes, with the dead, with the dying, with all that. So we will talk about it as respectfully as we can. Except for this hellblazer over here, Hoss. All right, we'll be right back. It's the Kelly Mano Show. Thank you for sharing your story, Marty. That was amazing. Thank you.
Happy to share.
Thank you. I can feel your head.
Kelly Mano Show.
The older she gets,
the more she understands Britney's 2007 meltdown.
Back once again, once again.
It's the Kelly Mano Show.
This is a transition for me, isn't it?
Are you going to sing?
Britney into Warrant?
Yes.
Yes.
It's black and white and faded.
Raise your hand if you saw him at Six Flags back in 91.
I'm sure he did, but I was busy making out with a boy on the time tunnel, so I wouldn't have seen it.
Well, that is the rite of passage in St. Louis.
Yeah, you were the dork at the concert. I was making out with boys.
Well, I was making, well, not with boys, but I was making out at the show, too.
Listen, that colossal, the big old Ferris wheel, there's probably been more babies made in that.
Oh, man.
My kids are like, can we ride that? I'm like, no, and don't touch anything in it.
You should have to go through a giant, like, waiting pool of Purell when you get off that ride.
All right, so we are here. Marty just shared his story about his near-death experience when he had his heart attack and flatlined. And we've got Michelle here, who is a hospice nurse, hospice manager for a couple years now. So if you've only been doing this 4 years, that means you were relatively new for my grandma's. Is that what went wrong?
No, because by that, I mean, I started out in it. You know what I mean? Like in nursing school 20 years ago.
Yeah.
That long ago.
Do you remember the first time that you saw someone die or you were with a family?
Yeah, I was not an adult. You know, I mean, I started out in peds. And so, and it really, it tore me up because you never know how somebody's going to process something, even being a parent. You just don't know. You like to think that she'll be there. I'm holding their hand and being with them throughout the whole process. But this particular family, I met him on the day he came in for a diagnosis when I was still a student.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had him as a nurse after I graduated. And his family could not deal with it. And so they asked that I would wake them up when I thought it was coming time, and I had to do that, and I sat with him, but I'm not mama, you know?
Right.
And at that point, they're not awake, really. I don't know what the awareness of. It's interesting to hear you talk, Marty, because...
That has to be the worst wake-up call to ever deliver. Hi, you need to wake up. Your child's dying.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you're there in their house with them, right?
Well, I didn't do... There is a program for that, but I was on the floor at that time, because a lot of people, especially with kids, are not comfortable passing at home.
Really?
Think about... Children's hospice, very little of it. Very, very small population.
I assumed that's what everybody did.
Mm-hmm. No, a lot of...
Do the families not want those memories there at their house?
I think that, and I also think they're not... You're used to such support on the floor if you need something. And we even struggled with that. Jimmy had a fit on me when all this was going on because we couldn't get meds quickly enough.
Oh, and that sounds like my husband.
Well, it's appropriate. I get that. But when you're at a hospital, that's not the case. And so I think there's a lot of just security in it. And
one thing that I always tell people is that everybody deals with grief differently.
Yes.
And you can't judge people, because my husband and I deal with things very differently. We almost lost Rocky when he was born.
Right.
He was given a 50% chance of survival. We watched them resuscitate him in front of us.
Holy crap.
It's a story I'll tell one day. But we handle things differently. And through all, you know, three of our four parents dying in 4 years, our son almost dying, Jimmy is a be in the room, watch the monitors, learn everything you can. Mm-hmm. And I am the let it go and let God. And I, with Rocky, there were times when I couldn't be in there.
Yeah.
You know, I remember a chaplain walked into the room and I lost it. I'm like, get out of here.
There's no need for you.
I know why you're here. Mm-hmm. You're here to pray my last rites over my son. Get out of my room. And then, of course, my husband's like, no, come in.
Please come pray.
And then, I ran out of the room screaming and crying. And I ran down the hall and like slid down the wall like a crazy woman in the HBO movie.
They're used to it, though.
You know, yeah. And my husband and my mom stayed in with the chaplain. They prayed over Rocky and he had a seizure while they were praying over him. And he had his last seizure, actually. Mm. And so just because I ran out of the room and couldn't handle that doesn't mean I was a bad mom.
Right.
No.
Everybody
not at all.
Handles grief differently.
Yes.
And you literally walk into a stranger's home and they have a family member dying. Mm-hmm. And so it doesn't surprise me that Jimmy had a heart attack because somebody couldn't get medicine fast enough.
Right. Yeah. Well,
that is totally my husband. That is exactly how he operates.
He may not remember that, so we won't have to.
He probably did it with, you know, my husband and I have been through 5 major deaths. Both of his parents, both of my grandparents and my dad in the past couple of years.
Yeah.
And we were with them all when they passed. Either, you know, in my dad's case, I was physically holding his hand. Oh. Or, you know, in Jimmy's mom's case, he was the one who found her and we were there within an hour later and still with her body.
Yeah.
My grandma and grandpa, you know, I was with them up until the very end. I was having Lucy the day that my grandma passed.
Were you having her that day?
And she, I delivered Lucy and she died within 24 hours.
Oh, my
gosh. So Jimmy had to. And I was, you know, my grandma on that side only had 4 grandbabies and I was the oldest.
You were it. I know she's.
I was the oldest and I was just really close with my grandma and grandpa. I've always been drawn to the elderly. I've always thought I would make a great hospice nurse because
I'm sure you would.
I love people. I love old people. And so like for me, I loved hanging out with my grandma and grandpa. And so for me to be having a baby and my grandma to be dying was really hard for her. And I had the baby and they ran to like 1 hour Walgreens and hung some pictures up on her wall and she passed. You know, once she knew that me and the baby were safe, she was gone. And so what is it like to walk into someone's house? And what, have you ever seen anybody die and you thought, wow, they're not going somewhere good?
Well,
I know that's a hard question, but you know, so many people have these great stories, like Marty's story of everything was peaceful, everything was good. Have you ever had a patient pass and you thought, oh shit?
Maybe by what families would report about them, or you know, like he was. I had one that I only knew for a few days because the average hospice length stay is less than 30 days. So we don't always get to know everybody as good. I mean, I had your dad on for 3. That was it.
Yeah.
But I was in the picture. You know what I mean? Like I knew what was going on.
He was barely home because I will never forget, you know, they sent him, I think it was more like 2 days because they brought in those adult diapers and set him on the table next to him. And he was like, F this.
Nope.
It wasn't me. I'm out.
You people are not changing my damn. We did not have to change one of his diapers.
We didn't.
All we did was buy him and set him on his end table. And he's like blazing middle fingers. See ya.
No, it was quick. But one person I met in the emergency room, and I think she was just mortified because they had to go through this man's house and they found just nasty things that, you know,
are inappropriate.
Everybody has a life before they get sick. I mean,
there really should be a service
that, yes,
that you could pay for, like prepay.
I will do it too.
That will says like, when I die, you have a key to my house.
Yeah, we all need that.
Here's where all the things I don't want my family to find
we all
are.
Need it. Trust me.
Get rid of it.
I have that deal with like a friend. I'm like, if I ever die,
she's out of town, Kelly. You better find somebody else.
Run to my house and clean my house.
Exactly.
But I'm not worried about my like naughty drawers. I guess maybe I'm a little more boring than some. But
oh, I don't know.
So what is it like? When somebody passes, has anyone ever passed in a not peaceful way? Because all 5 passings I've been there for were, I would describe as peaceful as could be for dying.
There's a period when this happens, there's a period of time where people usually don't breathe so easily. And that has always really bothered
me. My dad went through that.
You and I had to leave when that was going on.
So. I know. It's okay. Hey, I thought I was the one that was going to cry. So Michelle, her three kiddos, my mom has a daycare. And so her kids were raised in my mom and dad's house.
Oh, wow.
So yeah. My and her daughter and my son are like little boyfriend and girlfriend.
Nice.
Yeah.
And so, you know, aside from my dad, I mean, that was like treating your own kid's grandpa. Have you ever had to treat anybody else that was close to you?
Probably not that close.
Mm-hmm.
Now, did you get assigned this or did you ask?
She didn't have a choice.
I wasn't. Here's the thing. And that is, this is a tough predicament to be in. But you, it's kind of one of those things where you're like, well, I'm sure as heck. These are not my normal words.
Yes.
So I would choose to let you do it.
Well, right. Because my thought is, as a nurse, would they let you go do hospice on a family member? Or would that be considered not necessarily a conflict of interest, but are you too close to the patient at some point?
I think it depends on how you are as a professional. I think that there are some people that really would really struggle with that fine line. It's not illegal. So long I put him on the service of a company that I was working for. It was legal and legit. It was brought to, it's almost better if you have somebody, you always want a nurse advocating for you if you can have
absolutely.
It. Because I pulled an extra social work and I did this. I did the things that I knew that I could do. I really reaped the services that we could do. We could. So.
And the good thing about having someone you know is that we never had to worry for a second whether or not he was getting the best care.
Right.
We never had to worry for a moment. Like, could they be doing something else?
Well, because from a family member side of things, you're already going through an extraordinarily traumatic time when you know you're going to lose a family member, and now you've got to let, in some cases, a total stranger come in and be a caregiver to that person.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, in as much as it can be a help, the I would imagine at least the first day has got to be very stressful because there is a feeling out period.
I think, though, and maybe you can tell me, because you guys have all had some hospice experiences, but mm-hmm. the disposition when we come in, we're a different people. We're not trying to fix everything. We're supportive.
I think everyone's on the same page by the time you get to that point.
Not only that, but it's weird how the hospice nurse feels like it's been part of your family for so long.
Yeah.
When my grandpa was dying, which was after my grandma, the lady who walked in like sounded like my grandma and was wearing this really loud floral print shirt that was my grandma's. I'd never seen anybody else wear it but her.
Yeah. That's funny.
And they come in and they take over and they're like, here's what's happening. And they give you this book on death and dying.
Sure.
And they literally tell you everything that your relative is going to do.
Yeah.
And so I remember my grandma took forever to die. She was on hospice for like 3 or 4 weeks.
I was, and the hospice nurse wasn't there. She wouldn't let them bathe her. Okay, so here was the deal. Your mother said, and this is all your mom's fault, really, if you want to get down to it. I blame Joyce.
She was the one that killed her. But
she said, Michelle, I really need some help getting her a bath and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, okay. So I handled it. I didn't ask for any help.
Grandma Sally always wanted to be clean.
Well, I got her that way, and that was the last.
That was the last thing you do, and you put her in her favorite pajamas in her favorite color.
Well, that's probably just her way of relaxing. All right, I'm ready to go.
I think she was... okay.
How do you remember that? Like, you have so many patients.
Well, because these are I wasn't even on duty or working. I was just trying to help.
We were just like, too bad, Michelle. Get your ass over here now.
I need to give a bath.
We got another family member dying, so get your ass up and get over
here. That's kind of how it went. That one was really unplanned. I mean, the hospice nurse came out after that, you know, and did her thing, but...
Do you ever have hospice nurses that just don't get along with a family and have to switch out?
You do. And it's not uncommon that there's not necessarily a problem with that nurse. There are personalities that don't mix. You know, if somebody comes into the room and, like, Marty's a pretty upbeat dude, he seems like, right? So if I came in, I'm like, hey, Marty, how's it going? You feeling good today? A lot of people don't like that. They want the... I had a nurse that I had to reassign, and I thought she was wonderful on the case. I actually was there when she met the patient. The family hated her. She was too upbeat. Wow. This is a somber period of time. You just never know. And sometimes cultural things play into it, too, but... You know, we got to make the personality fit the family. And most of the time you can switch assignments. You know?
We went through that with my mother's father, who was a doctor himself. And he was in Arizona, and he had a daytime and a nighttime hospice nurse. And the one who you would think he would have connected with terrifically was a very clinical, very, how are you? Are you in pain? Like, just by the book, hated her.
Not necessarily she did anything wrong.
And my grandfather was a very clinical person. Like, my mom always jokes, her and her three sisters, they grew up never being able to say that they were sick.
Yeah.
It was... It was take two Tylenol and go to bed. Yeah. If you still don't feel better in the morning, learn to live with it.
Yeah.
So you would have thought that he would have gravitated to her.
Mm-hmm.
From the moment she walked in, he wanted nothing to do with her. The other person comes in, total, just very upbeat. Like my mom and her sisters are like, this is not going to work, because he's walking up. He's got a long ponytail down to his butt, the whole nine yards. They were the best of friends.
Yeah.
Like, to the point that, going back to the bathing thing, my grandfather was dying of cancer, and towards the end needed help bathing. And at one point, the nurse, Robert, walks out and goes, I thought I was going to lose him in the suds. That soap really soaps up.
I think that there is a roller coaster, you know, like when my dad was dying, like we were all sitting there, you know, doing something, and my Aunt Linda just busted the chair and went ass over tea kettle in the dining room. And I mean, you can't not laugh at that stuff.
Sure.
You know, it's almost like God sends that to you. Like,
absolutely. You have to have a sense of humor in it. You do.
You have to find the moments of levity to break the seriousness.
Have you ever had patients be mean to you? And you, like, I'm sure.
Oh, Lord, yeah. I mean, you have patients be mean to you, you know, but.
And you just know that it's not them talking.
You hope it's not.
Well, you know, some of them I had for several months, like, that were fighting dementia and things like that. Mm. That's a normal thing. And you get your ass beat trying to brush their hair. You know, that's just pretty much par for the course. But
oh my gosh.
I haven't anybody, like, fighting death or, you know, like, being a horrible person to me. Usually by that point in the game, it's almost a.
Right.
The book that they gave us on dying talked about this burst of energy that mm-hmm. a lot of times the dying get. And my grandma, in her final days, looked dead in her bed. Like, I mean, we couldn't believe that she was still functioning.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the hospice nurse said to us, listen, she's probably going to get a burst of energy. Don't be surprised.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, we go in there one day.
Wham.
She sits up in her bed. What the hell are all you doing here? I want to go in the living room and watch TV, and I want some buttermilk. And so we put her in her wheelchair. We wheeled her into the living room. And now she had been bedridden for over a month. And my poor brother had left to go somewhere. And he comes back. And this was before everybody had smartphones and texting.
Sure.
And he walks in, and Grandma's sitting in the living room.
Right.
And we're like, hey, Chris, look at Grandma. And he's like, hi, Grandma.
Mm-hmm.
And I think she even said something about wanting chicken wings or something. And by the time somebody went to the store and came back, she was back in her bed and it was over.
Right.
So tell me about why do they get this burst of energy?
I really couldn't tell you why that happens, but I can tell you, I'd say 70-80% of the time you do see that, even if it's in a couple days leading up to it. I've also seen, and particularly in the pediatric world, I hate to keep bringing that up, but I have seen parents try to spare the sibling of what's going on with your little brother or sister, but I have seen them hang on and hang on.
Oh.
And this was one in particular case, probably the second one that ever passed on me. They brought the little sister in. And it was horrible. I mean, she crawled up in her bed and told her, you know, I want you to go. I want you to be with Jesus. I want you to play with Jesus. Something along those lines, kid terminology. And I just kind of shut the curtain. And within maybe, I would say, the next 3 minutes, she was gone. But
oh,
she had hung on for days with no food, no IVs, no nothing.
And once that sibling came there and told her she could go,
then she was good. So there is something on a spiritual level, without any doubt in my mind, especially after hearing these things and reading things and just the calm that you experienced. I mean, there's something that we don't have eyes to see. And
I told my grandpa he could go.
Yeah,
it was and my Aunt Jamie did it for my dad because none of us could do it.
Right.
And she walked in and just let him have it on his deathbed.
Well,
she said, what are you still doing here, Dave? What are you still doing here?
Yeah.
They're waiting for you.
Mm-hmm.
Go.
Yeah.
So I'll be the funny guy again because I think we need it. I think it's interesting to hear you guys talk about that, because I've got a very limited experience with death. But in my experience, it seems like every person's spirit has something that they want closure on or to know about before they'll let go.
You're absolutely
right. For my dad's mom, much like in your case, although this was in 76, so there wasn't 1 hour photo.
Yeah.
she held on for a week, long enough to see her first photo of me.
Yeah.
For my mom's mom, we were all together. Because my mom was the third of four,
mm-hmm.
and then each of them, except for my parents, have three kids.
Yeah.
So everyone was together. For my dad's dad, They were out buying barbecue for my 22nd birthday party, and my dad or my grandfather had a heart attack in the Belleville.
I thought you were supposed to say funny stuff.
Hold on. Belleville Shop and Save parking lot, but held on long enough to know that I got home okay.
Yeah.
My mom's dad, the same one who was lost in the suds, was so excited about an IHOP opening two blocks from his house.
Hey, man.
All he wanted to do was go to IHOP. He didn't get to go, but it opened, and then he passed.
Well, you know.
When my grandpa died, we were going through his stuff, and he was all excited about the new Shop and Save that had opened in Granite City. That was all anybody would talk about. He had drawn an entire diagram of the store and what was in every aisle. That's,
I'm telling you, like, it's amazing what it is that some people, like, that's their thing. And in my grandfather's case, like, he wanted that IHOP.
Well, by God, it was open by
so
the time.
So, Marty, yeah. Marty, since you've had this near-death experience, would you say that you don't fear death anymore?
Absolutely not. In fact, I look forward to it.
And wow. Wait, Michelle, what did you just say?
I said me
Use
too.
Use the microphone.
I'm sorry. I don't. I would never, you know, wish harm upon myself or anything like that. But
no, me neither.
No, I didn't. Yeah, I'm sorry. But when I'm good with it, like when my time comes, I am A-okay. I mean, I truly believe this is not the end. And
people fear death. People fear death, and there's nothing to fear.
I agree.
It's the most wonderful thing that can happen to you. Really?
I don't know.
Well, Hoss needs to find Jesus first. I can name, after that.
I can name a couple things that I think are probably better than death.
He's talking about Axl Rose.
This is from my point of view, from my perspective.
Right. I don't think I fear death.
But,
I,
you know, this isn't the reality from what I learned, from what I experienced. This isn't the reality.
And that's a very good comment to make. I said this to Kelly off air. I don't think that I have a fear of death. I have a fear of the unknown.
Exactly.
And now
you don't know.
You have the insight.
Yeah.
And the other thing that I think is going to be interesting, and we talked about it very briefly, is heaven the same thing for everybody? Or when I pass, is it going to be a different experience for me than it was for you? Like, you described being in the middle of the country.
Yeah.
You enjoy that. For me, man, there better be civilization around me or I'm going to go. If you drop me off in a field, I think I've lost the game.
Well, see, the thing is, everybody's near-death experience is different.
Agreed.
But they all come back with the same philosophy, I guess.
I agree with that. Everyone comes back to
you know,
that
some
they feel
people
love
see beautiful cities with made of crystal. Some people see buildings made of marble, carved marble. Some, you know, see the country like I did.
Right.
And everything you took from your experience, Marty, has been positive.
Oh, yeah.
There was nothing negative about your experience.
Absolutely not. I came to a point, I didn't finish the part about my near-death experience.
If there's something else you want to add, go ahead.
Well, you know, those little squares I was talking about, TV screens, square bubbles.
Right.
I think those were all my lives, whether former lives or lives to be.
Wow.
Because
that's one thing I came back with. We don't live just one life. You live many lives.
I agree with that.
And another thing
was,
but it's
fascinating.
It was right around that point when I saw what Earth is like, or this life is like, that I knew I had to come back here. And I said, oh, no. And it's just something that came within me. That, no, I have to go back.
Wow.
And I thought, well, okay. I guess. And then I opened my eyes. I was in that ambulance, and I opened my eyes, and there's that my EMT tech, Noel, very feverishly working on me. And I just thought to myself, doggone it. What'd you have to do that for?
Right.
You know what? Right. I think we just need to end it right there because this has been a great show.
I agree.
Thank you, Hoss. Thank you, Michelle. Thank you, Marty. Thank
well,
you
you're
for
welcome.
Sharing.
Thank
even
you.
The painful parts.
Yours
the,
too.
The one thing I said in the beginning of the show is that I've never known anyone who had a near-death experience and wanted to come back. So maybe death isn't something that we fear, but something we look forward to. And it takes a situation like Marty's to put it in perspective. So thank you for listening to the show. As always, if you like the show, share the show. We will be back next week. It's the Kelly Mano Show.